I mean, the first year was just like a treasure trove of mistakes, honestly. You know, like so many things that we did that like, oh, we could do better at that.
Yeah, we thought of the name Crowded Table Farm based on a song by the Highwaymen, and some of the lyrics that particularly spoke to us were the lyric of everyone's a little broken, but everyone belongs. Mm-hmm. And that's the space that we'd like to create here.
Welcome to the 403rd installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. This is a gross generalization, but here goes. There are basically two kinds of farmers in the world. There are those that would much rather spend time with a herd of cows or a row of vegetables than talk to folks outside of agriculture about what they do and why they do it. And then there are those that jump at the chance to connect with other people any way they can. Such connections are foundational to the community-supported agriculture movement, and many farmers who direct market via farmers markets or other means enjoy spending time with the folks they are growing for. Obviously, there are many shades of gray between those two extremes, but you get the point. Soon after meeting Emily and Ryan Kiesbo Johnson at their farm in Minnesota's Sogan Valley region, it became clear to me they fit in the latter category. Emily and Ryan have spent their entire adult lives working with various communities and connecting with folks. It started in college and continued when they served in the Peace Corps in Uganda. For a few decades, they lived in the Frogtown neighborhood in St. Paul, Minnesota, where they continued to connect with community while raising two adopted children and pursuing their careers. Ryan does IT for a legal aid nonprofit, and Emily has worked as a classroom teacher. Today, she's on the St. Paul Public Schools District Technology Team. So when the couple decided they wanted to pursue farming in a rural area, it made sense that they wanted an operation that could somehow continue community connections. Maybe that's why LSP's Farm Beginnings course was such a good fit for the 40-year-olds, who took the class during the winter of 2024 and 2025. Farm Beginnings is a training program that focuses on the goal setting, marketing, and financial skills needed to establish a successful farm business. A major part of the Farm Beginnings course is holistic financial management, which focuses on big picture decision making and goal setting processes. In a holistic management system, a farmer's quality of life is put on the same level as the health of the soil or the operation's economic viability. Participants start out the course going through an exercise identifying what values drive them, putting them in a better position to choose the type of farming career that allows them to live those values. Ryan and Emily said the values identification portion of the program was particularly important to them. Through that exercise, it became even clearer to them that their main goal was to have a farm that not only produced food utilizing regenerative, soil-friendly methods, but was a welcoming space where folks could come and connect with the land and each other. Emily's family background is that her grandparents had a large corn-soybean operation in southwestern Minnesota. So she said an added benefit of the class was being able to connect with established farmers who are proving there are ways of making a living on the land that vary widely when it comes to size, as well as the types of practices used and foods produced. Midway through taking the Farm Beginnings course, the couple ended up purchasing a 14-acre farm in the Sogan Valley, a scenic region near Cannon Falls in southeastern Minnesota. They thought it would take longer to actually find a farm, so once they closed the deal on this property, the Kiesbo Johnsons had to modify somewhat their approach to the Farm Beginnings course. Suddenly, class discussions about what enterprises to establish on a farm weren't theoretical anymore, and the couple found themselves revisiting some of the class exercises to figure out what they'd be doing on the land that first growing season. That happens a lot in Farm Beginnings. Before a participant has a piece of land in hand, a wide variety of agricultural enterprises are a possibility. Once Emily and Ryan got a hold of those 14 acres, it helped them winnow down their vision for what the farm could be. That first growing season, the couple settled on producing vegetables and eggs on a moderate scale at their operation, which is called Crowded Table Farm. That's partly because they had experience while producing those kinds of foods when they planted a garden and raised chickens at their home in Frogtown. A lack of good fencing infrastructure precludes raising larger livestock for now, and an enterprise like bees could interfere with a neighboring beekeeper's operation. In mid-April, I visited Emily and Ryan as they were getting started on their second growing season at Crowded Table. They're still working their Twin Cities jobs remotely, but in 2025, they started a small CSA produce operation and began selling eggs from their small flock. They're also establishing a hip camp enterprise. In general, they're still at the stage of trying to figure out what might work best for this land, as well as themselves. But long-term goals definitely include producing food and managing the woodland and prairie habitat present on the land, as well as possibly creating some sort of gathering space for other parents of adoptees. After giving me a tour of the land on a stormy morning, Emily and Ryan sat down to talk to me about how the Farm Beginnings class helped them focus on their values and redefine their definition of farming. They also discussed how their first year of farming this land was full of the kinds of mistakes that can be invaluable when it comes to refining how things are done going forward. Finally, they provided insights into how a certain song inspired the name of their farm. So, Emily and Ryan, we just had a great discussion about your Farm Beginnings experience, and this is an interesting time to be talking to you. We're just a little over a year since you've moved to this place here, and you've done a lot. You had that first growing season under your belt. You're on the verge of your second growing season. One of the things that you talked about that I thought was really interesting with the Farm Beginnings class, a big part of it is, I think in the first, it's kind of in the early sessions, is doing this values exercise. And you were talking about how that was really key to you, because it sounds like you kind of approached farming from the point of view of what can we do that'll fit our values rather than, oh, we have a specific list of enterprises we want to do that maybe came later. And so you were really, values were very important to you. But then you realized as you got into the class, what was a nice fit was matching the values to, oh, this is, we got to crunch some numbers on this. It's got to financially work out too. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, those two kind of fit in a little bit.
One thing that Farm Beginnings really helped us with is just realizing that how much the values have guided the through line through all the things that we've kind of done throughout our careers and our lives. And it helped us to see how investing in this farm and being on this space could really just continue to be an extension of those values. And it helped us figure out both what our values were, but then like, how do we make it into something? How do we make it feasible to continue to create the community and belonging in a space while also doing that, you know, with farming and agritourism and things like that? It really helped us kind of wrap tangibles. How do you get insurance for something that's your values? How do you budget for something that's your values? It really connected those dots for us in a way that I don't think we ever would have without Farm Beginnings.
The other thing was that when you were taking the class, about midway through it or so, you all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, I know there was some effort that went into that, but you got this farm. You got access to farm. And I think you were talking a little bit about how it's that kind of changed your view of the class or how you were using the class, in that all of a sudden you could picture, oh, this is where we're going to be living, this is where we're going to be farming, and it maybe helped narrow your focus a little bit.
When we started Farm Beginnings, we didn't really know what we wanted to do or grow. And I remember one of the opening exercises was to stand up and introduce yourself and say what your enterprise was going to be. And at that time, we kind of thought, I don't know, anything, everything, anything. We're so excited about it. And so we moved forward planning and thinking hypothetically. But once we got on land and got our farm, it really like focused the experience for us, even to the point that we went back and redid some of the exercises to help us think about it in terms of the space that we now had. And it really helped us focus both the budgeting side that Ryan talked about, but also as we thought about the different enterprises and how we were going to take some of the lessons we learned about soil health into this actual real space that was no longer a theoretical, hypothetical dream, but a real space that we were moving into even in the midst of the class.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about, you kind of, I mean, as you realize this is where we're going to be at. There was some things that's like, oh, we're not going to do the. Can you talk a little bit about this? But maybe it also reinforced, oh, we could do this.
One idea we had was around raising bees. And once we got here, it felt like that wasn't the right fit for this land and for some of our neighboring farms that already had that enterprise kind of that they were engaging in. We thought about some small livestock or goats. And again, here, we just don't have the infrastructure for that yet. And so we are leaning into vegetable production and our small flock of chicken and ducks for eggs, and then learning about the local markets here and thinking about how what we grow will become part of our enterprises here, and kind of letting the land that we're on guide the enterprises that we're endeavoring on, both closing some doors, but opening other ones.
You started the small CSA last year and have the small lane flock, that type of thing. But what are some things that you learned that maybe you're going to utilize this as you start your second growing season and maybe kind of plug in there?
I mean, the first year was just like a treasure trove of mistakes, honestly. You know, like so many things that we did that like, oh, we could do better at that, you know. Everything from like, don't just let tools sit in your field. Put them back where you know they're going to be the next time, so you don't have to spend valuable time doing that, because the time you have is valuable. Both of us working full time too, you know, you have a short amount of time from the time you close your laptop to the time the sun sets. So like, make every part of that valuable. So we really are like thinking this year about how to streamline, how to improve our process. So how do we pack better? How do we make sure that we have the products going into the season now, so we're not having to scrounge up things to pack later on, and really making sure that the spaces we have are clean and built so that we can do that quickly, so we can spend as little time as we need to doing some of the parts that are never quite as fun, you know, the packing vegetables, but really be spending time out in the fields gardening, and also spending time investing in community that we want to bring onto the farm. So that's really where we want to spend a lot of our time too. So the less time we spent looking for a rake or fixing a lawnmower after you hit something that you forgot you put, you know, right next to your field, the less time you spend doing that is more time you're going to be able to invest in doing the things that you're passionate about. And that's really, I think, going into the second year, something that we're thinking about. But also, we know this is going to be another year of many mistakes that we're going to learn from. And that's also exciting and fun. Nothing is as Instagrammable moment as you imagine it will be, and it's so much better because you make mistakes and you learn from it, and you see the reasons why people do the things that they do, because you've made the mistakes. You realize, I didn't prepare for voles. You know, like, how do you do that? How do you make sure that they don't get to your potatoes? Things like that. And I've heard people talk about that, but until you make the mistake and you realize that you didn't prepare for something, then you're just so much more equipped with that experience to go into it better the next year. And so I love the mistakes we made last year, because I love doing it better this year.
Emily, any you think about adjustments or kind of what that learning experience of that first year? Now that the reality, it's not just sitting in class and hearing about other farmers, but it's the reality of you having to deal with what's going on.
Definitely. I think from the farming operation, definitely thinking about efficiency is a huge thing of what tools we need and what will our processes be, like Ryan mentioned. But I think we're also leveraging successes, one of which is that we've had an amazing group of early subscribers to join our CSA who have believed in us and encouraged us. And I want to continue to cultivate those relationships and also build additional partnerships with folks who would like to be a part of what we're doing here. And I think that's something I want to leverage intentionally, continuing to invest in our supporters and our customers, and continue to grow partnerships with our community, both here in the Sogan Valley and also in the Twin Cities, where we have a lot of existing connections.
You know, you mentioned mistakes, and I was in a meeting the other day where a farmer mentioned, you know, if we could put a wall around every farm, we would be much more innovative because people wouldn't be judging the mistakes we made, and we could make all the mistakes and learn from them and all that. You don't have a wall around your farm, but you are on a dead end road, so maybe that's a little bit. And that's something you mentioned. The downside that you said, I said, it's like, well, we're not going to have a farm stand because nobody's going to come down this road. But I think that's advantages to being on a dead end road. One of the things you mentioned was in the classes itself. And kind of going back to this issue of not always just talking about the opportunities and maybe painting too positive of a picture, it was just as helpful to hear, because a big part of the class is to have established farmers come in. But to have them come in and talk about things like, yeah, maybe it's time to walk away, or this isn't going to work out, or we decided to get rid of this enterprise because it just wasn't working, but also kind of the realities of what's going on. And that is a victory in itself, I think, for Farm Beginnings. If we can, honestly, if somebody decides after taking the class, this isn't for me, you guys decided to pursue it still, which is great. But can you talk a little bit about that? That kind of getting the reality check is just as important as maybe being around people who are just as excited about farming as you are.
It's really inspiring to hear people's stories. I shared with you earlier that it's amazing to hear how much people are doing with even so little sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it really helped reframe my ideas of what a farm is and what a farm can be. And then hearing from experienced farmers, I think, was inspiring to hear the things that are working. But we definitely didn't leave with rose-colored glasses. It really was helpful to hear the struggles that people are having too, including people who have chosen to walk away. I appreciate those who came and shared authentically about their stories, because it helps it feel more real, and it helps you know what you're getting into and where some of the pitfalls might be that you need to build support and resources for yourself around, because it's clearly not an easy thing that people are getting into, and people were really generous in sharing their stories of wins and challenges.
I think also too, you know, we both have established careers that we're really also passionate about. And so it was really good to hear people who are in the same boat, you know, farmers who are a whole person. They're not just farming. They're not just their day-to-day. They're not just a parent. Like, they're all the things. They're trying to manage and juggle all those things. And it was, incredibly helpful to hear those stories, see just, real people and people that are like, you know, I struggled with this. Like, you know, we were trying to parent, we were trying to do all the things, and we decided that I can support farming in other ways that's not being a farmer day to day, you know, and that was just super helpful to hear, even though obviously we don't know what our story is going to end up being on this land, but we can at least know that we're not a failure if after 5 years we decide we're not doing that anymore. Yeah. That's okay. We can still support community. We can still support sustainability in a multitude of other ways if that's what ends up happening. So it gives you freedom to know that farming can be many things, and you can support it in many ways.
That's actually a really good point about farming can be many things. And Emily, you mentioned you had grandparents, I think, who had a big cropping operation in southwest Minnesota. So your view of farming was that. And it must have been fun to go into this class and see, oh, there is a whole different, a lot of ways to skin that cat. There's a lot of different ways of farming, and to be around people who were like maybe pushing the envelope on what farming is. And, you know, realizing, hey, I'm a real farmer, even though I'm not raising 2,000 acres of corn and beans.
Exactly. I was just chatting with another emerging farmer in our region, and I said, I have a hard time like owning this identity, because I do think of farming and a farmer as one thing, and I'm working on claiming that identity that I am a farmer, even if our field is small, even if we're new at what we do, we are, and we're a part of this farming community. And whether it's big or small or experienced or not, I think we're all a part of that and working towards these goals. So yeah, that's been a fun identity to claim. I'm still working on it.
So one of the things that's really key to you, it just comes just conversation I just had with you and looking at your website as well, is a core value for you is community and reaching out to the community. And it starts like with the name of your farm, you know, Crowded Table, which I think is really neat. And there's some thinking that goes behind that. It's not just a clever name you came up with. You really. So can you both of you talk a little bit about that community aspect of it? Because that, again, you didn't go into this thinking, we're going to do this enterprise. It kind of, the land kind of spoke to you about what kind of enterprises would work on it, but really what you came into it, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but from what I gather is whatever we do, it's going to be somehow connecting to the community. So it'd be interesting if you could talk a little bit about how key that is for you.
One of the things that really drew us into the idea of farming and agriculture was when we were in Peace Corps. And I think being in Peace Corps, just like, and in the countryside of Uganda, we really realized that like farming is core to who we are, and like how we support our community and how we create space with one another is through our food. I think we can feel so separated from our food when we're in the US. Like it can just feel very, you know, transactional. You go to the store, you give them your money, you get the food. Like, whereas Uganda, it just felt like it was so connected to community. And so I think that was probably one of the things that really made us see the ways that food and growing food can be just an investment in community. And so I think that's what made it a natural evolution of kind of our relationship and our next step in life, was because we've always tried to invest in our community. We used to live in the Frogtown neighborhood of St. Paul, and you know, we were always trying to figure out ways to invest in our community, volunteer in our community, get to know neighbors, support challenging things and positive things happening in our community. But I think then moving here was just an outgrowth of like, now how do we bring our community along from St. Paul and continue to invest in a new community here. So I think it's been awesome to see the ways that so many of the people that are friends, families, coworkers in the Twin Cities still are super invested in what we're doing here. And we've continued to build community in this new space. So it's been very central to what we want to create as a place of belonging and community. And I think our world makes it more and more evident of that's what's needed. You know, we need food on the table, but we need to be able to like understand each other. We need to be able to talk to each other, and people need to have spaces where they can go and get away from just the craziness of everything that's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. We thought of the name Crowded Table Farm based on a song by the Highwaymen, and some of the lyrics that particularly spoke to us were the lyric of everyone's a little broken, but everyone belongs. Mm-hmm. And that's the space that we'd like to create here, both by hosting gatherings and creating spaces for people to be, and also growing nutritious food that we can share and that folks can gather around the table around. There's also a lyric about planting seeds for the future that you want to see. And mm-hmm. I think of that both metaphorically and literally. Here we are planting the seeds and investing soil in the soil in a way that we hope will show dividends for the future, but also thinking about as we build community, we plant seeds now and invest in relationships now, and we hope that those will continue to flourish into the future to create the kind of world that we want to see.
Awesome. Well, and speaking of community, it sounds like one of the, you know, we talked about that first year on the farm, the surprises, both pleasant and unpleasant. One of the pleasant surprises, it sounds like, is that you have a fair number of Farm Beginnings grads in this area, in this kind of Sogan Valley area, or Cannon River Valley area, but other beginning farmers too. So that must be really, I mean, not just get the moral support, but like you can say, how are you doing with this disease outbreak or whatever a little bit. That must be really important.
It's really helpful. We feel really lucky. It's like Farm Beginnings gave us a built-in community and network that we're connecting with. And then through those networks, you meet more people and hear more stories. And it's a pretty strong, I think, culture of farmers who share our values here. And we feel lucky to be in that neighborhood with them.
Yeah, it's a luxury even just to know that there's other people struggling with very similar things that we're struggling with. I think there's just a camaraderie in that, and looking forward to selling at the farmer's market next to some of our cohort from Farm Beginnings as well. So yeah, the networks go out, that's for sure. It's just an amazing network to be a part of.
So we're on the verge of the new growing season. How are you guys feeling? I mean, are you on a scale of 1 to 10, how positive are you feeling about this coming season? And then I'll check with you at the end of the season.
Depends of the day, man. One day, 10 another day. But yeah, I mean, I think it's excited, hopeful, scared, anxious. We have more CSA shares this year. We have a market stand this year, and it just feels like there's always more to do. And there's personal life stuff too, you know, that is the most important for us. And so there's no shortage of that either. But yeah, excited to have new opportunities this year.
I feel excited. I sometimes describe it as like you're looking up at a mountain you're about to hike and you're like, this is going to be great. And I know I'm going to love it. And it's also going to be really hard work to get up there and to get that view. And I think that's where we are. We're looking at the mountain. It's April. We got a couple seeds in the ground, a lot of plant starts in our sunroom. And we're looking ahead at the season, I think, with a lot of hope and anticipation and excitement. But it will be a lot of work and there will be unforeseen and expected challenges. And we'll just have to kind of keep taking one step at a time up that mountain, and I'm confident we'll climb it and we'll be happy we did, but it's both exciting and daunting looking at it now.
For more information on the Farm Beginnings course and Crowded Table Farm, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 403 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. We'd like to note that this episode, just like all Ear to the Ground podcasts, is the product of work done by real humans. Generative artificial intelligence, also known as generative AI, plays no part in the recording or editing of these shows. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendell, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.